Sam I Am, that Sam I Am. I do not like that Sam I Am.
Do you like green eggs and ham?
I do not like them, Sam I Am. I do not like green eggs and ham.
Would you like them here or there?
I would not like them here or there. I would not like them anywhere. I do not like green eggs and ham. I do not like them, Sam I Am.
Would you like them in a house? Would you like them in the mouse?
No, I do not like them in the house. I do not like them with a mouse. I do not like them here or there. I do not like them anywhere. I do not like green eggs and ham. I do not like them, Sam I Am.
Would you like them in a fox? Would you like them with a box?
No, now leave me the fuck alone.
Predictably drunk, smart people talking about stupid things. Welcome back to the podcast. This is Sam Marcou, as always. And you just listened to Jimmy Gunn, who local comedian, local legend, mentor to many of my friends in comedy. He actually passed away about a week ago. And what you listened to, actually, it's one of his more famous bits where he would get on stage and act out the different characters from Green Eggs and Ham. And the dude was just a talent, much more of a performing artist or a performance artist than a straight stand-up comedian. I think he was somebody you had to see to believe. I've got a newfound respect for everything he was able to accomplish. It's not easy. It's not easy to do stand-up comedy, and it's certainly not easy to be a performance artist, where you're purposely going up there at times to elicit different reactions other than straight laughter. And you have to be very brave and you have to be very talented in order to pull that off. And he did both, and he had both in spades. If you ever get a chance to look it up online, just, you know, go to YouTube or Google Jimmy Gunn comedian, G-U-N-N, and, you know, just watch. But figured I'd play a little bit of his stuff as a small tribute to a man who meant so much to so many. And with that, you know, we'll just say happy retirement, Jimmy Gunn. Moving on, we've got a good show, packed show. Dave Pounder, porn star, is going to be joining me here in a couple of minutes, which gives me just enough time to let everybody know that I've got a lot of shows coming up. So if you missed the first one, get to the next one. Tommy T's August 19th. JJ's Blues in San Jose on August 21st. That's with myself, Frankie Marcos, who's been a guest on this show, Michael Gilkison, who's been a guest on this show, as well as Kabir Singh, who will be a guest on this show. In fact, he and I are working on something that if we're able to pull it off, will be awesome. And then we've got August 23rd at the San Jose Improv as part of the Big Bad and Sexy Tour. And then Wednesday, August 26th at Russell City Sports Bar and Grill, along with myself, will be Sam Meeker, who's also been a guest on this show. It's actually his room. And headlining is Phil Griffiths, which I've actually never worked with Phil before. So this will be a treat for me to finally get to meet somebody I've known about for a while, but never actually done any work with. And then finishing that week, hosting a night over at Cobb's Comedy Club in San Francisco. So kind of a slam-packed week coming up for good old Sam Marcou. Dave, actually looks like Dave Pounder's just about ready to get on the show. So we'll go ahead and talk to him. I'm looking forward to this. I've brought this up a couple times, but we have a bona fide porn star legend on the show here tonight. And we're just going to go ahead and let him get set up. And once he's set up, we're going to go right into the interview. Oh, is he ready? All right, then. All right, joining me now here on Predictably Drunk, the podcast, is a gentleman by the name of Dave Pounder. And I know what you're thinking. You're hearing the name Dave Pounder, and you think, man, that sounds like a porn star's name. And if you're thinking that, you are absolutely correct. Dave Pounder is a porn star, an esteemed pornographer, if you will. He's been producing, directing, performing in adult films for over a decade with over 100 titles to his credit. Can you imagine that? 100 movies of fucking, ladies and gentlemen. But beyond that, he holds a bachelor's degree in finance from Michigan State University, a master's degree in information management from Arizona State University, and has studied media economics and human sexuality at Indiana University and is accepted into the doctoral program at Concordia University in Montreal. This guy almost has as many degrees and college credits as he does porn titles. My God. And everybody listening to this right now probably thinks, Dave, that since you are a porn star, that you're probably just a vapid idiot who can't do anything right other than maybe get a hard-on. And just reading your biography right here, that is absolutely not the case. You got quite the life here, sir.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. You know, I've always noticed that society has placed, you know, taboos around human sexuality, which I think were unfounded. And to give you an example is like, you know, back in the day, everybody thought that, you know, everything revolved around the earth. Because, you know, in the Bible, it said, oh, the sun and the moon, everything went around the earth. And there were other quotes in these sort of religious texts that talk about how, you know, God took Moses to the top of a mountain. And he could see all the world. So they thought the world was flat. And then you started seeing all this scientific evidence about, well, it's the world appears to be round. You know, the data suggests that everything revolves around the sun. And the people who made these claims initially, you know, in spite of these religious texts, were persecuted. They were killed. They were put in jail. And then ultimately it came to be. So any of these sort of novel ideas are usually met with initial criticism. I think our view regarding sexuality today falls into that mold. I mean, we get our sexual morality, if you will, if that even makes sense. It's kind of like saying, you know, eating morality to me, or any other, you know, going to the bathroom morality. I mean, anything that has to do with a basic biological need, or breathing morality, it just, to me, doesn't make sense. And in all of the data, when you look at our closest primate cousins, like the bonobos and the chimpanzees, we share over 99% of our DNA with these other mammals, and they are highly promiscuous species. Sex is primarily a form of social bonding for them, not so much reproduction. Actually, for us, I should say, even though we're as closely related to them as we are, you know, the only, other than chimps, bonobos, dolphins, and humans, okay, we have sex about 1,000 times per birth, whereas most mammals have sex about 12 times per birth. So when they say, you know, you're going to F like animals, you know, we're worse than animals in the sense that we have sex when women are menopausal, we have sex when women are on their periods, you know, we have sex when women are pregnant. You know, there's a lot of reason that we have sex where reproduction is not the output. And to suggest that sex is for reproductive purposes, that it should just be between two people forever, all of this is really tied to agriculture and property rights. And it just never really made much sense. So to me, if I could get into the porn business with my background as someone who's never, you know, been arrested, I have a good, you know, a good educational background, speaking of predictably drunk, I didn't even drink alcohol until I was like 24, 25 for the first time, you know, never done drugs, that I can come on the stage and have these conversations and say, you know, why is sex perceived as bad, or why shouldn't people have casual sex? I mean, think about your alcohol. I'm going to try to play on this predictably drunk thing. I mean, if you and I go out to a bar and I offer to buy two women a drink, I'm considered a nice guy, even though I'm basically contributing to, you know, think about a lot of things that are tied to alcoholism. I mean, not even just drinking alcohol, but like, you know, there's liver disease, kidney disease, people, you know, a lot of domestic violence is linked to alcohol. There's, you know, DUIs, you know, people die due to alcohol death. Nobody's ever died from an overdose of pornography. Sex is very healthy, assuming you use protection. And it would be much more prudent or much more rational for me to walk up, for you and I to walk up to a girl at the bar and go, excuse me, would you like to come home and have casual sex with us tonight? And, you know, we would be slapped or publicly harangued as a pervert for doing that, even though it's a much healthier interaction compared to offering somebody a smoke or a drink.
Yeah, you must not hang out in comedy clubs too often, because that's pretty much what most of us comics lead with once we get off stage, is not, can I buy you a drink? It's more like, hey, we get a free drink after the show. Can we go have casual sex in the green room? So talk about this a little bit. You said a mouthful, no pun intended. First of all, everybody listening to this, if you'd like to pause it and go Google what a bonobo is, feel free. We're not going to hold it against you. But once you come back, I want you to hear this part. So how did you get into this? I mean, obviously, reading up a little bit about you, you were born in England, and you've got you're obviously a very educated person with regards to the degrees you have, you're college educated. How did you get into this whole porn star porn lifestyle? Was it something you always had on your mind, like, I want to pursue this, or did you just kind of, for lack of a better term, fall into it? How did this go about?
Well, you know, when I was in high school, I think even middle school, my cousins from France were in town. And, you know, they basically came in, and they were all, my brothers and them were huddled in the room. My friend and I were like, what are they doing in there? So they all went off to lunch. So my buddy, we snuck in there, and we realized they had somehow got access to this porn video. So I called my buddy with the VHS. He comes over. We copy the tape. And then we basically order, you know, we watch it. You can order videos at the end. So I scammed my mom, and they're like, hey, mom, I need a dad's credit card number. I don't know how I did, but I found a way to basically get a check from them or something. And then my friends and I waited in anticipation for our arsenal of tapes to come. And then we had a supply of porn to watch. And we used to watch it and be like, these guys are so lucky. Like, you know what I mean? Like, some people like want to grow up to be like, you know, doctors or astronauts. I'm like, I want to do this porn. This is fun. You just go around and like have sex with all these girls. So anyways, what happened, but that was just like a fleeting moment. You know, it's kind of like, like the women watching a romance novel and says, I want to meet a guy like that.
Yeah, and sorry to interrupt, but for the record, the kids today have no idea the struggle of trying to get your hands on any sort of pornography, right?
I know, right?
I started laughing because what you just said is something I grew up with. I had a friend who basically got a subscription to Playboy magazine through his dad's credit card, and it came in a black bag every single month, and we had to run into his room, sneak in there, and basically, you know, look at it for about 10 minutes before his parents found out what we were doing, and then hide it again, right? So, I mean, today, they can just go on their phones, they can go on the internet and find everything. They have no idea what it's like to sneak porn into their house.
Those lucky bastards.
Lucky bastards.
But, you know, so, so basically, you know, they have their, you know, and really porn's really just a masturbatory tool, you know what I mean? So it's, you know, it's just, they're no longer basically put in a predicament of, you know, like, it's like saying, you know, we're going to restrict food access to young males. And we used to have to, like, sneak into the neighbor's house and raid their fridge while they were sleeping and eat, you know, like, it was just like, why? It's so ridiculous. And the thing is when you look at, like, you know, there are no studies on how porn affects the brain of kids because no IRB board, no institutional research board at a university is going to say, oh, yes, we're going to allow this study where you're showing kids porn. They're going to be like, oh, yeah, I don't think so. And they can't find a cohort of people who are adults that haven't watched porn. You can't find a comparative group, a placebo group, if you will, of men who are over the age of 18 who haven't watched pornography. It doesn't exist.
Right.
So if you're going to argue that, oh, you know, watching pornography turns people into these raping, violent, negative attitudes about women, if you can't even find a cohort of males that hasn't watched it, and we don't live in a society where most men are off committing sort of, you know, antisocial acts of sexual violence against women, clearly there isn't at least a causal link there, you know?
Yeah. So you got, from what I read, you got into porn after going to Arizona State University, and you joined a swingers club, correct?
Yeah, it's even better. So before then, I go off to college. Well, I went to an all-guys Catholic school, so I didn't really, like, know girls. I went to college. And then when I went to college, I dated this girl, Leslie, for 6 years. And she was great. I mean, attractive, like, get everything together. Like, there was no reason not to get married. But part of my brain was like, I want to have sex with all of Leslie's friends, and all the girls in my class, and everybody that I work with. And I thought it was just me. I would say to her, hey, we should have group sex. And she's like, what are you, nuts? And I'm thinking, okay, she's boring, she's conservative, I'm not. I just need to find someone who's more like progressive like me, right? So then when I broke up with her when I went to graduate school, and she was devastated because we had such a great relationship. And but then I was off trying to hook up with all these girls, and then I noticed a pattern. All of these women were trying to get in the relationship. Why didn't she call me the next day? You know, I just saw this female versus male strategy. It wasn't a Leslie versus Dave strategy. It was a male versus female. So I went to like the academic graduate library at Arizona State, started researching personality disorders and, you know, gender differences, and then I came across evolutionary psychology, the discipline, and I started reading more and more about it, and it made sense. Leslie at the time got me a subscription to Hustler for my birthday because she was cool like that. And there was an article about a swingers club in Costa Mesa, which is right next to Irvine, where I lived in California.
Sure.
I never checked it out while we were together because we were always together. We had like one car, like we were always attached at the hip. I would get her jobs wherever I worked, you know, except for in Port, obviously, because we weren't together. But, you know, so when I got back to California after graduate school, I checked out this place, and sure enough, it was like a sex club where couples and go, and sometimes husbands like to watch their wives with other guys, or couples would hook up or whatever, and I just started talking to this couple, and I was pretty confident in the sense that I just started making out with the wife and had sex with her right there on the couch. And I didn't realize that the protocol for these swingers clubs is really to kind of like pair off and go get a room or go to a hotel or go back to their house. So I'm having sex with this girl in front of everybody. I didn't care. And this guy comes up to me, and he's like, hey, have you ever thought about making a movie? And I'm like, well, why me? He's like, well, you can do it in front of everybody, you don't care about being watched. I'm like, I'll try it, sure, why not? And then that's how I kind of got into it. And then one thing led to another. And then I was doing it part-time while working at the bank. And then, you know, then I was getting so much work, I quit the bank and did it full-time. Then I realized, you know, the talent, the performers down the road didn't have that much money. So I got into directing and then producing and then consulting. And now I have these mainstream projects, you know, the book and the documentary.
Sure.
So...
Well, speaking of the book, you've got a book called Obscene Thoughts, A Pornographer's Perspective on Sex, Love, and Dating. It kind of examines the progressive and intellectual academic constructs regarding male mate selection, sexual behavior, and the reasons why people cheat, which you just hit on all those topics pretty much right there. So you get into porn. You start going through, obviously, the swingers club. The guy hits you up. Would you like to be in a movie? What was it like your first time? And did you go fly out to the valley there, or how was this done? And this is a fascinating topic.
Actually, Or, no, I lived in Irvine, which is about
gotcha.
From LA. So I just went there like on a weekend, or I don't know, maybe I took a day off of work. But it was, you know, and I went down there. And the thing is because I was used to swinging by that time, like I never had a problem getting an erection in the swingers club. It was always about like, oh my God, like I've watched porn with my friends and the scenes seem like they go on for 40 minutes. How am I going to go for 40 minutes with this hot girl and not ejaculate or, you know, climax? And I'm like, oh crap. I'm like, I know, like if I masturbate first before the scene, then I'll have more staying power. So I told the director, I'm like, let me know 5 minutes before the shoot starts. And he lets me know. I run in the bathroom and I rub one out. You know, I brought some lube in my pocket. So cause I knew what my strategy was going to be. And then I told the girl, I'm like, all right, she knew I was nervous. I'm like, what if I'm going to come? Can I stop? I don't want to hold everybody up. Like, cause they got the lighting guy, the camera guy, the stills photographer,
right?
The director, you know, all these people are basically hinging on my erection. I'm like, what if I come? I'm going to screw it up for everybody. So I told the girl, okay, we're safe now. Cause she knew I was nervous. She's like, if you need to stop, just stop. I'm like, I'm not going to hold everybody up. So I rub it out. I go up to her. I'm like, all right, good. I just rub one out. And she looks at me. She's like, are you fucking crazy? I'm like, what? She's like, oh my gosh, you better get a boner. I'm like, I will. And then of course all the lights turn on, all the people are there, and I'm like, no boner. But the thing is unlike the swingers club, you got like a gazillion watts of light on you. You know what I mean? You got stop, go. It's not like you just enjoy the girl. It's like, all right, hold it. I got this. Bring a light in. But what happens is whenever they try a new guy, me at the time, they always do what's called a boy-boy-girl scene. It's all straight stuff. It's just two guys and a girl. So what happens is then the other guy who was an established performer, you know, they shot all the hardcore angles on him doing the girl, and then I was just softcore. So it looked like I was hard in her mouth, but I wasn't because it just looked like it. But they were filming from his hardcore angle on sex. And then when they would switch, I would pretend I was having sex with her, you know, on the backside, and they were hardcore on him with the oral with her. So it looks seamless. I mean, if you're watching it, you have no idea that I was never hard in the entire movie. You know what I mean? Because the editors would even like look at me, you know, when I was like having sex with the girl at softcore, and then they would cut to his hardcore shot. You know what I mean?
Right.
So basically looking at his penis thinking it's mine. And, so the viewer has no idea because the editors are great. And, but then I knew, okay, mental note, you know, don't rub one out before scene. So, you know, you learn, it's like anything else. I mean, if you're a firefighter for the very first time, you're trying to climb up a ladder, you know, with all your gear. I mean, eventually over time you learn what works for you, what to bring, what not to bring, where to step, you know, and, you hone it. And then after about a year and a half, I really had it down.
Man, I would have been impressed. I'm impressed that you got on stage after rubbing one out. I would have taken a nap and said, "Can we just do this tomorrow? I need time to recover here."
I was excited.
So you said the whole industry works as you said, boy, boy, girl, or man, man, woman. One of the rumors I've always heard, and I actually went to high school with a kid who ended up going into porn, and he actually started in gay porn, and I think he's doing straight porn now. But that's always the rumor that I've always heard, is that the men actually start off in almost some sort of gay porn. Is that not true, or is that just kind of?
I think maybe half. You know, I've been offered that a gazillion times, but I've never. You know, for me, I tell people never do. You got to remember, I had a professional business background. I didn't need money, right? So I think a lot of these guys that come in through that route, like, you know, there's no shortage of guys who want to do straight porn. There's a huge shortage of guys who want to do gay porn, unless you're gay, right?
Right.
So, and I think, but the most recent statistic is that gay males are like 10 or 15% of the population. We still have an overwhelmingly 85% of people who are straight. And to me, like, I just, you know, just like most women wouldn't do porn, most men wouldn't do gay porn. I mean, now, if you're like in a really shitty situation, maybe you were abused as a kid, or kind of the reasons women get in, you know, they were like, most normal chicks don't just go, I think I want to go have sex with a bunch of random men on camera. And most, you know, regular dudes that are straight don't go, oh, I want to go around and have, you know, gay sex with a bunch of guys. So no, I mean, I have nothing. Listen, I love gay people. Like, I think gay people are the best. You know, they recycle. I never hear about gay people getting arrested. You know what I mean? Like, it's always some straight guy that's like causing problems. And so I love the gay people. I'm big gay marriage, et cetera, but I'm also very public health conscious. So part of the reason I got out of porn is because, like you said, there were a lot of these gay males that were crossing over into the straight side, and that just concerned me from a epidemiological perspective, you know, because when you look at HIV transmission and things like that, it's overwhelmingly what they call an MSM problem, which is men who have sex with men. So that includes gay men, bisexual men, etc. And if that's the primary method of infection, and once you get HIV, you're basically the most infectious at that period. Like, so, but by the time you get your next test, you're most likely to infect other people. I'm just like, you know what? This is just way too risky of a situation. So since they're not using condoms and porn, this is part of the documentary I did, you know, it's probably better for me at this point to just get out of it, the business, because there was just way too much crossover at that point. So I got out.
Yeah, if I remember correctly, I remember hearing or reading something about an HIV scare that pretty much shut down the entire porn industry a few years back, did it not?
Yeah, in 2004, Darren James and some people went to shoot movies in Brazil, and they had anal unprotected sex in Brazil, of all places. And then they wonder why they came back and, you know, infected a bunch of people. so, yeah, I mean, usually when you hear about an HIV outbreak, it's almost always, you know, there was a gay guy, or maybe there was a straight porn actor in the working sense, but he was bisexual with his girlfriend. I think there was a bisexual guy that had sex with his girlfriend and she did a scene or something. Or, you know, like with this Darren James thing, it was an anal scene in like a high risk environment. I mean, like, if you basically want to maximize your chances of getting HIV, you have anal unprotected sex rough with a high risk population, like, you know, intravenous drug using African Americans, nothing against African Americans, just demographically they have higher HIV rate. And then you're pretty much in Fort Lauderdale or the San Francisco Bay Area, right? If you do all of that, then, you know, you're really increasing your chances. And to minimize your chances, aside from just complete abstinence, which makes no sense, would be to have, you know, just vaginal sex, you know, assuming you're having sex, oral sex is, I mean, you know, it's, if you want to say oral sex, fine, but like oral vaginal sex with non-African American, non-intravenous drug using populations, that's your lowest risk group. So I try to like mitigate the risk by kind of focusing on those risk groups that are lower. It's not about volume. HIV isn't a volume thing. It's the type of act that you're doing.
Sure. Sure. So you mentioned, you know, most people that get into porn aren't necessarily, shall we say, well adjusted, right? They've got issues stemming from abuse or maybe, like you said, down on their luck, things of that nature.
Girls.
With females. So have you ever met a female porn star that you've either worked with or just met within the industry that was, you would consider, quote unquote, normal? Or is it pretty much across the board? No.
I thought so once. I'm like, oh, look, this girl's normal. Like, I was all excited. I'm like, maybe I'll date her. And then, of course, like 2 weeks later, she's arrested for like something. I forget what it was. But like, no, I mean, the thing is, but you got to remember, it's like, it's not, the analogy that I use is like, is that of a horse, right? Like, if there's a horse in the wild, right, a horse that's born with no interaction of humans, if a human tries to ride it, like when a cowboy gets on a horse, it has to be quote-unquote broken. The cowboy has to break the horse, right?
Yep.
Lassos, you know, all this kind of stuff. And eventually the horse basically submits, and then all the people who quote-unquote ride the horse is like, oh, the horse loves me. The horse couldn't live without me. He loves being in the barn. I want to take him out for jumps. I'm like thinking, yeah, okay, whatever, right? And then it's kind of like girls. Girls, in the natural sense, if they haven't been abused or whatever, don't just want to have random sex with a bunch of different men. It's not in their evolved sexual psychology. They don't win in an evolutionary sense by doing so. The only way that happens is if they are either sexually abused or even just once or sustained emotional abuse over time where it really knocks down their self-confidence, and then they use sex as sort of a way of making themselves feel better, even though it's just more of a vicious cycle. And for the physical abuse, it's more of a catharsis experience, trying to recreate it and master it or learn from it. So this is why girls were able to get into porn. It's kind of like saying, you know, to say that there's a girl in porn that hasn't been sexually abused, hardcore porn, I'm not talking about like modeling for Playboy, is like saying that there's a horse that's been that loves to be ridden that's never been broken by a cowboy.
Right.
What do you mean all horses have been broken by cowboys? That's just a stereotype. You know, I'm like,
right.
No, it's not. It's just not natural for a horse to be ridden by a person. It's not natural for a girl to want indiscriminate sex. And the reason for that is that men have a lower cost of sex. If I meet a girl and I'm walking down the street and I say, hello, we have sex in the bushes, my investment is as little as 5 seconds. I mean, 10 seconds, right? Like, I can just come and go. And I don't have any other investment or obligation beyond that. Okay, so it's in my interest to go out and have sex with the world, because the more kids I have, theoretically, the more likely it is for my genetic material to pass into future generations. Richard Dawkins wrote a book called Selfless Gene that basically is kind of a theory behind that argument. And then for women, if women mate indiscriminately, and, you know, they have a, what they call a minimal, obligatory parental investment of 9 months just to have the kid. And then once the kid's born, you know, you don't want to raise the kid on your own. If you want that kid to survive, you need protection, you need resources, you need parenting from the male to help, you know, and, if you just had sex with 10 guys and you have a baby, the guy's like, that's not mine.
Right.
You know, we're going to have paternity time. You know, our evolved brains, all this medical technology is within the last, 100 years, after hundreds of thousands of years of evolution, you can't just expect our brains to go, oh, well, they're on birth control, so it doesn't matter. Like, it doesn't work like that. You know, it's a very, very slow changing process.
I know my mindset, every time my kid does something like kick me in the nuts or break something that I just bought, I demand a parental, a paternity test right then and there, even though I know for a fact that she's mine. I'm like, I want another test. I want to triple stamp this thing. You're listening to Dave Pounder on Predictably Drunk here with Sam Marcoux, smart people talking about stupid things. Dave Pounder is a noted porn star as well as an academic. We're just talking about the different parts of the porn industry and his life in general. One of the things I had a question for you is, doing porn, does porn sex ruin regular sex for you? I mean, does it become hard to have sex with a quote-unquote inside of a normal relationship, or are they two different things? Is it basically work and play?
All right, so here's my analogy back to you. So, Sam, I heard you went to Applebee's yesterday, and I'm wondering, when you go out to all these restaurants and just, have this food, does it take away from eating at home? Like, does it take away from your home-cooked meal with your wife and your kids? Or, how do you do that? Like, how do you go to the Cheesecake Factory, or get breakfast at McDonald's drive-thru and then come back and have lunch? I don't get it. Like, how can you have your wife cook you? Like, there's lovey-dovey sex, and then there's porn sex. Like for men, men's sexuality is more goal-driven. It's kind of geared toward orgasm, where women, female sexuality is more about pleasure-centered. It's more circular, where sex is not the end goal. It's just one of many other elements on the circle with holding hands, connectedness, cuddling, conversation, etc. are all equally important in the women's overall sort of pleasure center. So it's just a different thing. I mean, for guys, having sex is like an oil change. It's just something we do. It's like taking a dump or taking a piss. It's like just something we got to do. So this is why guys, hire prostitutes. Women don't hire prostitutes. Male prostitutes are for male clients, not for female clients. There's no shortage of men looking for sex, and there is a shortage of women because women aren't interested in sex for its own sake. So no, dude, I love doing a porn shoot, or I love just hooking up with a random girl. Even if I'm in a relationship, because in the analogy I use is this. Think about if you want to franchise a restaurant, right? This is a business decision. So you say, okay, you want to become a franchisee. Now, you don't want to – you probably don't have the capital to invest in 20 different restaurants. So you're going to pick one, and you're going to be more selective about that one that you get involved with. So have a good franchise model. What's the upfront franchise fee? How much do you have to pay per month? What's the startup capital cost? What's the menu like? Who's the competition in the local market? There's all this analysis that goes in. And once you've made that commitment to the restaurant, you're there 40 hours a week minimum, throwing all your resources, time, blood, and energy into the restaurant. Okay, that's a business decision. Just like when a man gets with a woman, it's kind of like, do we have shared life goals? Do we have the same idea for how to raise kids? Do we want to live in the same places? Do we like the same things? Do we have the same religious philosophy? All these things go into a decision on who you're going to mate with in a long-term sense. Then there's casual sex. There's just short-term mating, and it's the same as going out to eat. So just because I decide I'm going to franchise a Cheesecake Factory, just because I go eat at the Olive Garden or I eat at Applebee's doesn't mean that I don't love my investment in the Cheesecake Factory. It doesn't mean I'm going to divest my Cheesecake and now franchise an Olive Garden just because I ate there. Like, you're eating in these different places merely because you want the variety. A similar analogy could be made to traveling, right? If you assume – I live in Boca Raton, Florida. I mean, assume that it's an anthropomorphic city, and it has feelings. And I say – and I have a house here, and I have a business here, and I have my friends here. And I say, I'm going to go to San Francisco for the weekend to hang out with my buddy Sam. And Boca, my city, starts crying. Why do you have to go there? Is our airport not good enough? Is our beach not good enough? What do they have that I don't have? And they internalize it. And I'm like, nothing. I'm going to go visit Sam, hang out for a bit, and come home. I'm not going to sell my house. I'm not going to sell my business. I'm not going to leave all my friends and move to San Francisco. I just want the variety. So where women can understand the variety in traveling, even though the city they live in has all these same things at their destination in terms of supermarkets and culture and men and women and movies and things, having sex externally with other partners doesn't mean that you want to leave your primary partner if you have a male mind. Now, the female mind is different. The female mind is more like a job. If you have a job where you make great money, you make like $200,000 a year, you walk to work, it's so close. and you love your boss. Your boss is your best friend, your college roommate. Everything's great. If I come up to you and I'm like, hey, Sam, you want an extra $50 to mow my lawn? You're like, no, I'm good. I'm okay. Go find somebody else. I'm fine. Because you don't need the money. You don't need it. Your job gives you everything you need. When do people start looking for another job? When their boss becomes a jerk. When the company relocates and now they have an hour commute instead of a walking commute. When the salary gets cut from $200,000 to $75,000 because they were demoted, then they start looking for another job. So for women, if the guy's investing in the relationship mental or emotionally, physically, and financially, if those three things are being met, she doesn't have a history of emotional or physical abuse, sexual physical abuse, and she respects her boyfriend and his occupation, you know, then she's not going to cheat. She won't. You know, I researched this exhaustively, and every time the girl cheats, there was a quote in a movie called This Girl's Life. They called them 99ers. It said, if a guy goes to the bathroom and a girl says, hey, can I give you a blowjob real quick? 99% of men will say yes. And if you do it to a woman, if I stop a woman or most guys and go, hey, on the way to the bathroom, can I go down on you? 99% of women will say no. So men basically need a reason not to cheat, and women need a reason to cheat. Mm. And men, as Chris Rock says, are basically as faithful as their options, or I change to say men are as attractive as their or as faithful as their attractive options, because most men don't want to have sex with 500-pound, 90-year-old nursing home women.
I think I saw you in that movie, actually. I remember that one. No. So what is the strangest thing you've been asked to do or that you performed in porn? Was there just something you're like, wow, that one's going to go in the old scrapbook when I'm done with this career?
Yeah, there was one called clown porn. That was funny. They dressed the girls up as clowns, and like I'm like sleeping in the bed, and they were the maid service, and they come in, and I'm having sex with these two female clowns, which is interesting.
You're talking like big red noses and yeah. Like green afros and shit like that?
White makeup and the color hair. It was some fetish site. It was cool though. I had fun doing it. You know, the girls had nice bodies. You can't really see their faces with the whole makeup and stuff. And then another one that I didn't do because I'm not into fat girls was a fetish site called Feed Me, Fuck Me. And what you do is you basically, these ginormous, like 300-pound girls, you feed them cheeseburgers while you have sex with them. And I'm just like, yeah, it's not really my thing.
That sounds amazing. I'd be a 300-pound fat chick, or at least put a wig on if I could get cheeseburgers and get fucked. That's amazing.
I know, right? But it's like, you know, but the funny thing is, even those girls too have been abused. You know what I mean? Even if girls don't have access, most women don't just want to make discriminately. It's not in their interest. If you read the book, speaking of promotion, if you go to obscenethoughts.com, you can link to, you know, other interviews I've done. You can see the book's actually a bestseller on Amazon twice in the psychology social science area. It won the Book of the Year Award at the American Library Association Conference for print review. You know, it has positive Kirkus reviews. Customer reviews are mixed. I've noticed that whenever people buy the book at its retail price, meaning they have the resources to do so, which is correlated with education, the reviews are more constructive and positive. Whenever Amazon puts the book on sale for like 99 cents and then a gazillion people download it, and then those are the ones that get pissed off and go, oh, clearly a pig. I'm making arguments. Like, you know what I mean? I'm like, I don't just go, you know, men cheat. I say men cheat because.
Right.
Women don't make it because. And then all the criticism, nobody has explanations. They're just like, this guy's full of shit, but not why I'm full of shit. You know what I mean? So
yeah.
I would like people to give more constructive negative feedback is always wrong.
No, you know what? I'm the same way when it comes to my comedy or anything else. Tell me what you like. Tell me what you didn't like. That's the only way we learn. And, you know, doesn't mean you're right with your criticism necessarily, but I'm willing to listen to it. What's the weirdest thing that's ever happened in porn in terms of, for you? I mean, is there not just the title of the movie, the type of porn, but do you ever have any accidents farting?
Absolutely.
Or?
That was kind of funny. But it's like, you know, a couple of weird things. I remember one time I was shooting this scene and I'm like having sex with the girl doggy style in this bed that's pretty high up, and the director's like, all right, I need an up and over shot. So you're like doing doggy style on the girl, and then you basically kind of like curve up over her back and like you're up on your knees. And when I did that, because I'm a tall guy, I'm 6'3", we're already on a tall bed, there was this fan that was like at a high speed and it smacked my head. I got this big welt. I'm like, do we need to call an ambulance? I'm like, I think I'm going to be okay. Like, it's kind of like those, you know, when you watch like Bugs Bunny as a kid and like the Wile E. Coyote gets hit and then he's got all those stars. And
sure.
Like, it was like one of those moments. I'm like, hold on, give me a second. And so that was interesting. One time we were having sex and the bed broke, you know, the bed collapsed. Another time I was at the beach, San Onofre Beach down in, you know, Dana Point area, and we were having sex. It was funny. It was a boy-boy-girl shoot. And, you know, I'm doing the girl on her back, and she's blowing this guy, and there's like these rocks that are probably like a foot high. And to anybody who was approaching us, it would look like it was like a bunch of guys having sex because like the girl's lying on her back beneath the rock, so you can't see her. And there's all these guys going, oh. So these cops come up to us, you know, these beach patrol people, and they're like, you guys got to leave. I'm like, oh shit. Like, we didn't even see him coming. I'm glad they didn't, no pun intended, right? I didn't, they didn't arrest us. They let us go. And, we just went back to the studio and just finished the scene there. But that was memorable. You know, there's always something, you know, the girl, I didn't know girls squirted until I got in the porn. Like, I'm having sex with this girl. I'm like, holy shit, did you just piss on me? What the fuck? And I was like all freaking out and like pissed off. Another funny thing is I don't do anal. I'm not into the anal. And I was directing for Bang Bros, and they had me on this site called Newbie Black, I think it was. And it was basically new black girls and, like, but, you know, what, like white-featured black girls, like hot black girls, you know. And, like, so I hold the camera while I talk to the girl and do the shoot. So there was this one girl, and she said, well, I'm a virgin, so I only do anal. Like, her thing was, like, the virgin porn girl who only has anal sex. And I'm like, well, I'm not going to do the shoot. So the main guy there, the main owner of the production company for Bang Bros was like, well, then maybe we need to find another director. I'm like, well, maybe you do, because I'm not going to do it. So when they realized I wasn't going to do it, they let me use one of my favorite male talent, Kevin, who I hired a lot. And we hired him. And I'm filming Kevin as if he's me. Like, I have the camera on his shoulder, so because the viewers think it's me holding
sure.
the camera. I wasn't going to do the anal. And
you had a stunt cock, essentially.
I'm like, exactly. I'm filming this, and I'm like, what is that smell? And this crap was like coming down Kevin's penis. So I was like, like I don't do anything. If that had been me, I would have been like, all right, dude, between my OCD with germs, you know, like my fear of like HIV and all that like crap running down here, I'm like, like I was just like, and it's funny because I look at all the production assistants, because there's a lot of people on a porn shoot, and I'm like, aha, I was right.
You know, it always boils down to poo. I've spoken to firefighters, emergency people, and they say, you know, I can deal with blood, I can deal with broken bones, I can deal with death, but as soon as somebody poops themselves after a car accident and I got to pull them out with their shitty pants, it's, you know, they're on the side of the street throwing up themselves. Poo, there's something about poo, even your own kids poo, it's just gross. Yeah.
You know, I was talking to this nursing. I dated a nursing student, and she was telling me that they have to do these things called impactions, where older people.
Yeah.
I was like, you could not pay me. Like, I love the schedule, 24 on, 24 off, or whatever these nurses do. But I'm like, I couldn't do it. I can't.
I interviewed a paramedic on this show, Predictably Drunk, and he was telling me about there's actually a medical condition, and I cannot remember the name of it. I know there's a few people that are listening that will know the name of it, where they get so impacted and so constipated and things happen that you can literally throw up your shit. Like, it's a medical condition where you actually vomit out your poop, which to me is the scariest thing I've ever heard in my life, beyond even clown porn in that case.
Yeah, I can see that, though. I mean, if you think about the way the biological tract is designed.
It's got to go somewhere.
Yeah, well, it goes through your mouth and out your stomach. So if that gets all backed up because you're clogged, then it gets into your stomach will then sense the bacteria and then expulse it. In the same way that if you ate rotten food or something, that you would throw it up as well. It wouldn't want it to go through the track.
Right.
I could see that happening, but wow, that's crazy.
Yeah, but I just don't want to literally see it happening like these paramedics and doctors have. That's disgusting. So in your estimation, how many women have you slept with in your lifetime at this point? Do you have kind of a ballpark figure you could throw out there?
No idea. I would say, definitely over 1,000.
Wow.
I don't know beyond that. I mean, but I would say somewhere between 1,000 and 2,000, I guess.
That's a lot of sex, my friend. Good for you.
I love it. I'm a happy guy.
Good for you. Well, listen, you're Dave Pounder. Thank you for being on the show. I want to play a game with you so the audience can play at home. And here's what I was thinking. The game's called Punk Band or Porno. And if you can't figure it out based on the title there for the audience there, the listening audience, what this is I'm going to throw out a bunch of names. Dave's going to guess whether it's a porn name or whether it's a punk band. If he gets it right, we're going to plug something. He's going to go ahead and throw something out there for you guys to check out to learn a little bit more about Dave. If he gets it wrong, what I'm going to do is actually plug some of my comedy dates coming up and some of the stuff I've got coming up on television, some other stuff. So as much as I like you here, Dave, and you've been a fantastic guest, I'm actually rooting against you in this game just for my own edification, my own sake here and my own plug. So the game's called Punk Band or Porno. Are you ready to play?
Yeah, although I got to tell you, there's 10,000 porn movies released per year and probably not as many punk bands. So statistically, I got porn answers on my side.
All right. First one out the gate. This one should be pretty easy. Punk band or porno? Butthole Surfers.
I'm going to go with... now I don't know because I think you're trying to sneak. See, because you want to win. Now I feel like you're being sneaky.
I will tell you the truth 100% on this. We do not lie here Unpredictably Drunk unless we're lying.
Butthole Surfer. I'm going to go with the band. You know why? Because who cares about the surfers? You know what I mean?
You're absolutely right. Butthole Surfers is a band, basically an alt-rock punk band from the late 90s. had some nice hits that were played on alternative rock stations, the Butthole Surfers. So, Dave, feel free to plug anything you want to plug right now. Go ahead and get that out before we get to the next one.
I'm going to plug first my bio website, which is pornographyexpert.com, PornoGraphyExpert.com, pornography expert. And the nice thing about plugging that is that if I never win again, that links to all the other
people. That's smart. That's a good strategy. Very good strategy. All right, next one out of the gate here, Penis Flytrap.
I'm going to go again with the punk band.
Penis Flytrap is, in fact, a punk band. Your time to plug. Go ahead.
All right, I'm going to go with the book, Obscene Thoughts, A Pornographer's Perspective on Sex, Love, and Dating, www.obscenethoughts.com. Get your copy today on either Audible for audio, softcover, or Kindle.
That was a plug and a half. We're going to let that go. All right, next one here. Porno or punk band? Cock and Ball Torture.
Porno.
In this case, it's actually a punk band, my friend. We finally got you on this one. Feel free to check out me on sammarku.com. You can find this podcast, which you're probably listening to, on sammarku.com. You can also find all my comedy dates coming up, all the Instagram photos that you love and comment on all the time, as well as all the things that I write, including Not My Proudest Moment, The First Date Fart. Wrote that article last week. Very popular with everybody out there. Feel free to check it out, sammarku.com. All right. You're probably going to get this one, but let's go ahead and move forward here. Punk band or porno? Schindler's Fist.
I'm going with porno.
That is 100% a porno. And feel free one more time to throw a plug out there.
All right. The plug is for the documentary Risky Business, A Look Inside America's Adult Film Industry, which is a political and public health documentary. Go to www.riskybusinessthemovie.com. Won awards at 2013 Film Festival. A gazillion awards. All at riskybusinessthemovie.com.
Award-winning Dave Pounder. All right, next one, punk band or porno, Mystic Bieber.
I'm going with the, this is a toughie. I'm going to go punk band.
It's actually a porno, sir. Yeah.
It's close. That was a good one.
I think that's a play on Mystic River, the Clint Eastwood movie that he directed.
Yes, I forgot about that one.
So since you got that one wrong, that's good for me. You can check me out on August 19th, opening for Jason Lawhead, who is Bill Burr's boy. You guys know Bill Burr, the comedian. Jason Lawhead is his opener. I am now his opener at Tommy T's in Pleasanton, California, August 19th. Tickets on sale now, but going fast, almost a sellout, so get there quickly. All right, let's do two more. How about that? Let's just see two more. All right, let's. What about this Mouse Cunt?
I'm going punk rock band.
You know, that one's actually a porno, but it seems like a trick question, so I'm going to go ahead and let you plug whatever you want. But I also want to see Mouse Cunt because I have no idea, based on that title, what that would be about other than maybe a tiny, tiny vagina. I don't understand what that would be necessarily. So that is actually a porn title from what I could gather online. So feel free to go ahead and plug whatever you'd like to plug.
In spirit of your fairness, I would like to plug Dave Pounder on the Sam Marcoux Predictably Drunk
Beautiful
podcast. How's that?
I love that plug. All right, we'll go with one more. I'm gonna go ahead and choose one here. This one's hard. I think this could be, no pun intended, but this one could go either way. So let's go ahead and throw this one out there and see what you know if it's a punk band or a porno. And this one, the title is Hot Buttered Anal.
Yeah, that's right in the middle. Maybe it's a punk rock band that did a porno. Huh. I don't know. 50-50, I should flip a coin. Let's see, I'm going to go with the number 7, and that's an odd number, and odd's first, so let's go with punk rock band.
You are absolutely right. They are a punk rock band. I believe they're actually out of Osaka, Japan, of all places, as well. So Hot Buttered Anal is, you know, that's probably a porno as well. It probably is both. But I think you just caught on to a new genre, a punk band that makes pornos. I think that might be something, and maybe the next directorial, or you know, your next director movie, whatever the fuck I'm trying to say right now. I don't know. The show is called Predictably Drunk. I've been drinking. I can no longer speak correctly. So that is the game: punk band or porno. Dave Pounder, you did exceptionally well, much better than I expected.
Plug. I got a plug. What the hell?
We're not done. I was just giving you praise.
Stealing my plug. What the hell?
Oh my gosh! You act like I stole your scene in a movie, sir. No, go ahead. Feel free.
I'll tell you what, I ran out of things to plug. The best pizza in the world is a pizza place called Pizza Popolis. I believe they ship overnight anywhere in the U.S. Go to pizzapopolis.com. PIZZAPAPALIS. It is phenomenal. The deep dish pizza, so yummy. They ship it overnight. Dry ice FedEx. It's like 20 for the pizza, 20 to ship. $40 pizza worth every penny.
I have a confession to make, sir. You know, you've been a great guest here. I think my audience is loving this and everything we're talking about and everything we're doing here. I have to admit, though, every time you mention something that's outside of the porn industry, and it's the stigma that I'm sure you're stuck with, everything you say sounds like it should be a porn thing, or that it's dirty, or that you're making some sort of subtle hint back to sex, whether you're talking about breaking down horses or screwing like animals or even talking about pizza. It all sounds dirty to me. Is that a stigma that you get all the time, that, you know, people just think it's constantly on your mind and you can't have an actual genuine conversation?
Not really, but hey, I'm all for it. I'm a big fan of sex. So listen, people want to, I like when people sexualize things because it makes me more likely to get laid.
Dave, thank you very much. Coming from, you know, actually, you're from over there in Boca Raton. You're in South Beach, my home away from home. I'm a huge Miami Dolphins fan. I love the Miami Dolphins. I got my start in comedy doing Miami Dolphins jokes and shit of that nature. So this is kind of a nice circular, surreptitious thing right here. A lot of my fans probably know who you are because of that area where you're living right now and some of the stuff you've done over your years. But Dave Pounder from DavePounder.com. You can also, I found a plug for you, by the way, that you didn't actually plug when you were winning here. You can follow Dave on Twitter at Dave_Pounder. Okay, that's on Twitter. You can follow me at Tiger Clomedy on Twitter. Dave, thank you very much. Awesome interview. Everybody go check out his book, which is, go ahead there, Dave. The book is called Obscene Thoughts:
A Pornographer's Perspective on Sex, Love, and Dating. And you can get that at www.obscenethoughts.com, where you can read reviews and watch interviews and get all the information you need to see if you want to buy it in any format you want.
And feel free to deny that you guys are actually looking it up right now, but we all know you are. We all know you are. And then you can also check out the documentary Risky Business, A Look Inside America's Adult Film Industry. Examines the social, psychological, and economic impact of performing in adult films. Thank you very much, Dave. You have yourself a good night, and we'll talk again soon, sir.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right, sir.
And there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Dave Pounder, pornographer, sexpert, almost doctor, right here on Predictably Drunk. 45 minutes of sex talk and pornography talk and everything that's going on in the adult entertainment realm, as far as Dave Pounder knows. And you're welcome. You're welcome. Next time you see me, thank me for that interview, because I know you loved it and I know you love me. So be nice, be kind, and offer a thank you to me. You know what else you could do? You could also follow me on Twitter at Tiger Clomedy. You can follow me on Instagram at Predictably Drunk. You could also go to, if you happen to have Tumblr, predictablydrunk.tumblr.com, and just check out all things in the universe Predictably Drunk. You can catch me on the road August 19th at Tommy T's, opening for Jason Lawhead, August 21st at JJ's Blues, along with Kabir Singh, Michael Gilkison, and Frankie Marcos, August 23rd at the San Jose Improv as part of the Big Bad and Sexy Tour, and then also the week after that at August 25th, that's a Wednesday, at the Russell City Sports Bar and Grill in Hayward, California, along with Sam Meeker, who was a guest on the show not too long ago. And then August 26th at, Cobb's Comedy Club in San Francisco. I might be the 27th. I might have my dates wrong. It doesn't matter. Just go on sammarcoux.com, check the calendar, buy tickets, come see me at the show. Tell me how much you love me. I'll tell you how much I love you. And then we'll all be friends. Got it? Get it? Good. Predictably Drunk, the podcast. Smart people talking about stupid things. Until next time.